The Tom Woods Show, episode 808.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, if you don't yet have my free ebook, Five Paths to an Online Income, you are missing out. This is a how-to guide, how to podcast, how to self-publish a book, how to monetize a blog, and so much more. So it's a how-to guide, and it's also a how-to-monetize guide. It's both. Check it out at pathstoincome.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Neat conversation today. I am joined by Professor Michael Rechtenwald of New York University, who caused a bit of controversy, let's say, not long ago when he created a Twitter account that at first was not associated with his name, in which he took to Twitter to mock the social justice warriors and the general atmosphere on college campuses, including his own, in which the students have safe spaces and people are afraid to express their views because of the totalitarians on campus. So he was just tired of it. And he's not even on the right. He's just a regular professor, and he was tired of this behavior. And, well, when they found out who it was, let's just say a lot of interesting events ensued after that. So Michael Rechtenwald is a professor of liberal studies at NYU. His areas of interest are history and philosophy of science, secularism, science and literature, and others. He's the author of numerous books, including in 2016, 19th Century British Secularism, Science, Religion, and Literature. He holds a PhD in Literary and Cultural Studies from Carnegie Mellon University. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you having me.
This is a great story here, and as we were saying just before we went on, I think professors like you have got a great book contract that could be lined up with somebody for this, because I think people got impatient with political correctness years ago, but on the campuses, it's vastly worse than it used to be. And I mean, I graduated from college in 94, and it was pretty annoying, but it wasn't to the point where it is now, where it's you've got these the students who are being coddled, the faculty who should know better, who are encouraging this behind the scenes, and there really is a chill over speech that I didn't really feel as a college student. I mean, I think we were exaggerating in the early 1990s, but I think it's real now.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, tell me about your background. You don't identify as a right-winger, and you're not a Milo Yiannopoulos.
Not at all. My background, if you want to know my political background, I mean, I've gone from basically a liberal activist at one point in the around 2000 to being more left and, being a leftist of late. And then with this whole crisis that I've undergone here, I'm rethinking everything, to be frank with you.
Wow. Wow. That's a really, really honest response.
Yeah.
Very rare to hear somebody say, maybe I'm rethinking something.
Yeah. I mean, I wish that people would say on Facebook and everywhere else that I don't know. How about that? I'm sort of agnostic with reference to my own politics at this juncture, but I will say I know who my enemies are, and they're not exactly the people that I thought they were.
Now, that is fascinating. Let's talk about what you did. Just give me a couple sentence description of what you did with Twitter.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that in a minute. But then what I want to talk about is what got you to the point that you felt you needed to do that. So what was the thing you did on Twitter first?
First thing I did on Twitter was after a certain episode took place, I decided to create a handle called AntiPCNYUProf. That's the name, the strict name of it, at AntiPCNYUProf. I used a Nietzsche icon as the face for this, and I said exposing political correctness and the erosion of academic standards in blah blah blah, and made some tweets. One of them was about Halloween because they had the students had sent me this thing that they were sent regarding Halloween costumes and to be careful what they wear and so on and so forth. And I tweeted about that. I just tweeted about some of these some of these events or this whole milieu and phenomena of you know, social justice warrior, PC tribalists that have overrun the universities and that are so frightening. And I've made some posts, and some a reporter from the NYU student newspaper, Washington Square News, contacted me, said this tweet, my tweets had somehow got her attention, wanted to interview me. I agreed to the interview. After the interview, I decided to put my name on it because what I liked what I'd said. I didn't think anything I'd said was that objectionable. Frankly, it was just a different perspective. It's not against diversity or against any peoples per se. It's about a political perspective. And I was roundly attacked. Immediately, a committee in my program penned a letter in response. There was two deans on this committee and several faculty members. They penned a response to my interview as if I was talking to them, which I wasn't. If they haven't got that message yet, they should get it. I wasn't talking to you. You mean nothing to me. And they roundly condemned me in this letter. Meanwhile, I had said in my tweets that I was afraid to come out and identify because I thought the PC Gestapo would come after me. And sure enough, they did. This was an official letter from an official committee of diversity, inclusion, and something else. Complete misnomer for that committee, by the way. It's nothing of the sort. It's a Stalinist or wannabe Stalinist attack group, in effect. And they proved that through their response to me. I mean, and then I was the same day that letter came out in the paper responding to me, I was called into the dean's office. He said he wanted to speak with me very shortly. And I got in there and suddenly he pops on me that there's an NYU human resources person that's going to join us. And I'm not allowed to say that anything except that what came out of this washing machine was I was going to have a leave of absence, a medical leave of absence that would begin immediately.
A medical leave of absence because of your mental illness for disagreeing with these people, or was medical just a cover?
Listen, Tom, there's lawyers listening to this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I heard you the first time. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. Carry on. I don't want to get you thrown in jail here.
Listen to this, Tom. There is no connection between my opinions and my leave of absence.
We got that officially on the record. Okay. what I want to know before we get further into that is, you've been a professor at NYU for how many years?
I'm on 8.5 years now.
Okay. So what have you been observing there that made you, as somebody on the left, say, something's wrong here, I've got to do this?
Well, unlike some of my colleagues, apparently, I pay attention to academia at large, not just my immediate environment. You know, I'm reading about what's happening at these other universities, and it's strangely, it's all trickling down from the Ivies and other elites into the general population of universities, and I'm just seeing this craziness going on, right? I mean, the stories are myriad. I can't even begin to, you know, enumerate them. But there was a cancellation of Milo Yiannopoulos at NYU. There was the institution of a bias reporting line. So I see the encroachment of this SJW ideology into NYU, and I start to get nervous, frankly. The bias reporting line disturbs me greatly because, to me, this turns the university into Jeremy Bentham called a panopticon, you know, an all-seeing, all-observing, super surveillance system. And that's what I saw this as. And I wanted to say something against it because I don't think first of all, it has nothing to do with undoing biases or undermining or overthrowing prejudice or racism or sexism or homophobia or transphobia. No, it will do nothing of the sort. This is simply a way of locating and controlling individuals who may be aberrant and then punishing them and making the whole system feel better about itself that it's doing so, but it has no effect on racism at large. As a matter of fact, it produces its opposite. I've said this several times. The alt-right is really a reaction to this lunacy, and they're just producing what they exactly oppose.
So you leave the meeting with the dean on the understanding that
I'm on a
leave. You're not going to be teaching for a while.
I'm not going to be teaching for at least the rest of the semester on a medical leave of absence. Naturally, people start telling me, oh, that's suspicious. And I started getting paranoid. Okay, maybe they're right. I thought I took them, everybody at their word. This has nothing to do with my opinions. And then people start like, are you kidding? But then I have to buy back into this idea that it has nothing to do with my opinions. And so I was interviewed. I accepted an interview from the New York Post. And they wrote the article. It went out. And then all of a sudden I'm flooded with requests for, you know, interviews, and tons of stories start appearing all over the place. I couldn't keep up with it, frankly. And so on and so forth. And then the fallout has continued. It's stabilized with reference to my workplace, although I am being shunned, as far as I can tell, by my colleagues.
Yeah, of course, who all are open-minded and believe in a diversity of opinion. You know, I'll tell you something. I would not describe myself as a Donald Trump supporter.
Right.
But after the election, when we got all these lectures about the need for openness and toleration,
right,
I thought to myself, how many of these protesters have sat down around a table with some Trump supporters to try to have a meeting of the minds and try and understand why people might have voted for him? Of course, the answer to that is zero, because they already know these people aren't even human beings to them. They're just human garbage, not entitled to an opinion.
That's right. It's also based on who they are rather than what they do, they're being condemned morally. This is a huge moral condemnation that's going on. I was morally condemned, and I'm just a little aside here, recently, minutes ago, in effect, for saying that I thought it was ludicrous, the idea was ludicrous that Trump was going to set up death camps.
Yeah, can you believe there are people saying this?
Yes, they're saying it, and these are very intelligent people. People that have been friends of mine are now disavowing me and condemning me for saying that I thought it was ridiculous, that this idea was completely outrageous, that Trump is going to set up death camps and start putting people in them. Come on.
Yeah. No, what I've been saying on the show is profit from stupidity. I want you to make bets with these people. Tell them that in 4 years, you're going to make a bet, and if in 4 years there have been no camps, you know, the guy owes you $500 or something, and you just do this.
No, Tom, you can't trust them because anything could be construed as a death.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
They'll just change the terms, you know. This, you know, so we're not dealing the left is an hysteria machine. It produces hysteria. It's an hysteria generator. And so you can't talk to this. And, you know, I mean, you see it in these screaming students on campus, screaming at administrators and faculty over things that, you know, you'd think that they had killed their whole family and, you know, and so on and so forth. But all they had done is write an email about Halloween costumes. And for this, they're being basically screamed at, condemned, MF'd up and down. You know, I mean, I tell you what, if any students come after me like this with screaming and so forth, they're doing it with the wrong person. They're not playing, you know, they don't want to do that with me. Let's just put it that way.
But Michael, I got to ask you, as somebody who has identified with the left in the past,
yes,
what has changed in your view?
It's moved. I don't know. I don't know whether it has just moved towards this totalitarianism or this totalitarianism was always already lurking, to put in some POMO, postmodern jargon, whether this totalitarianism was always already lurking under the surface. But it's sure out. It's out. And I am very wary of saying this, but I think the reaction to Trump is going to be much worse than Trump.
Oh, I agree completely. Especially because you're panicking people unnecessarily based on absolutely nothing the guy said.
Well, you were crying wolf like I've never seen before, you know, death camps, this, that, and the other thing. And if you disagree, you're somehow anti-Semitic. Listen, I'm not anti-Semitic if I say I think you're imagining things. I'm sorry. I mean, listen, I know these things happened in the past, but this is the United States of America. Let's be real. This is a vastly diverse culture with numerous apparatuses and institutions that ensure all kinds of, you know, perspectives are able to survive and so on and so forth. And also that nothing like that kind of extreme hatred gets institutionalized in the state. I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't see it happening domestically. Right. I mean, we've had our international disasters and fiascos, but, you know, I just don't see it happening in the domestic sphere.
You used the phrase afraid to come out a little while ago, and it made me think on college campuses today, I don't think there's anybody who thinks, good heavens, I can't reveal to anybody that I'm homosexual on this campus or I'll be shunned. You'll be celebrated and welcomed. Like Caitlyn Jenner was the bravest person in the history of mankind for saying something that got the entire media, academic and political establishment all out in favor. Whereas somebody who disagrees is going to have his career ruined and be shunned.
Right. I'm much more at risk for being straight, white and male. I mean, there's no question about it. That's the endangered species. Okay, they have taken the so-called hierarchy and inverted it. Okay, such that the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And only it's an earthbound political hierarchy that's been inverted, such that the top, what they conceive to be the top, is now the bottom and must just sit there and be kicked. Okay, and must take it, you know, and not say anything back, and then drag themselves around in shame. That's the straight white male. This is the demon. This is the devil. This is the ethical abject, if you will, that which is thrown out. So it's very curious that so-called, I call it marginalized hegemony.
Yeah.
Okay. That is to say, those that are supposed to be on the margins are actually the hegemonic. Okay, so it's a very tricky thing. They're saying they're on the bottom in order to be on the top.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. It's a bizarre situation. Now let's get back to the events that occurred, because apparently after this meeting, sometime after in November, am I reading this right? It was announced that you were being appointed full professor, promoted to full professor.
Yes, I got a promotion in November. I think it was like November, just a day or so before the election, I think. I was promoted to full professor from assistant. So that's two.
Whoa, you skipped associate.
I totally skipped associate and was pushed up to full professor. This led people to speculate that, in fact, I had been that NYU was nervous about the publicity and so on and so forth.
Wow.
I think perhaps I'm wanting to give myself credit here, but the promotion, I applied for it in April, so it took all those months for it to come through, and I was promoted in a batch of other people who also got the promotion. Had I not got the promotion, given the people they did promote, I would have had a massive case for discrimination, you see. Okay, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm sure I know what you're talking about.
I had four books. This is not the boast, but my colleagues can rub their faces in this a little bit, since they're such cowards. I had four books published in 1 year. Okay, so there.
Yeah, I love stuff like that. And you know, I'm not in academia anymore, but I'll tell you, I've written a bunch of books myself, and half the time, people who would come after me, if you put them all together, they hadn't done half of what I had done.
Oh, which yeah.
I just, for some reason, I don't know, maybe this is the little boy in me, I relished that.
Awesome.
But when you applied for a promotion, were you applying for, I mean, it's pretty audacious to apply for full professor. Were you just applying for the next step up?
I thought I was reaching, to tell you the truth, but I did it anyway, and I thought.
Oh, okay. Good for you, and you got it. Man.
Got it, yeah.
That's, okay. So that's a very interesting thing. So you got, was there any campus reaction to the fact that the guy who's in the crosshairs gets a promotion, almost unprecedented promotion?
I have no idea, because I wasn't there. You see, I've been off campus entirely.
Oh, because you're on leave.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on or what's being said about me. Only thing I know is people don't answer my emails at all. So
that is unbelievable.
People that I've been friends with, that I've helped, that I've done things for, that I have been buddies with, have turned their backs on me for my expression of a perspective, which is certainly anything but despicable. It's just a perspective. Give me a break. I mean, it's unbelievable to me.
but they're committed to a diversity of opinions, Michael. I'm sure you'll be welcomed back with open arms, unless they're total hypocrites with no principles, and I find that impossible to believe.
You see, the thing is, though, somebody did point out to me, since I'm coming back from a leave of medical absence, that I actually now am a protected category.
Oh, indeed. That's right.
So they can't abuse me or anything because I can just report them.
They'd be creating an unsafe work environment for you. Oh, man. Oh, you could turn it on. This is true. Now, this is such a tremendous story because usually these days you get professors in Canada, they get beaten down and brought before the Human Rights Commission. They can't talk about the case for 2 years. But in your case, you actually came out swinging and you won. What do you attribute that to?
I'm superhuman. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. It's just the confluence of events that turned out this way. But, you know, I mean, there's been some, you know, I've had some. I've won the war, apparently, but I lost some battles. But it seems that I'm intact. So that's the good news, right?
The trouble is, though, when you go back, you're going to go from what I assume was a somewhat congenial environment to a cold and frosty one. Is that concern you?
At the very least, if it's not one of vituperation and people utterly, you know, actually screaming at me. So I'm very, very reticent and quite apprehensive about the return. I'm thinking of irony of ironies. And I'd like to hear some feedback from listeners about this. Should I ask for a safe space office?
Yeah, maybe you should. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I demand my coloring books and my puppies.
Because feel endangered by the environment of people that are, you know, these social justice warriors and their fierceness and their attack mentality.
Of course, in your case, you actually need it, unlike the drama queens. I want to ask you, did you approach the Washington Post about writing that article?
They approached you.
All right, because I'm going to link to that. I want people, this is episode 808, so this will be linked at tomwoods.com/808. People should read your article. I love when you quote what your opponents at NYU said, and it's all this gobbledygook, and they're making it look like they're being magnanimous, and at the end you wrote, thanks, ? Perfect.
All they were doing was spewing memes. You know, what they do is have, as I've said in other interviews, they have plug-and-play language that they pick up, you know, like things like gaslighting, which was utterly inapt in terms of a description of what I was doing. It didn't gaslight anybody. I didn't even know they were there. You know, gaslighting is an intentional method and an intentional, going after somebody and attempting to drive them crazy based on simulating a false reality, okay? I didn't even talk to them. I don't even know what they're talking about. So they said I was silencing them. That's interesting since they spoke after me. How can you silence somebody when they're speaking next? Meanwhile, they were trying to silence me. So, I mean, you know, just this nonsense verbiage that's just plug and play PC meme garbage. It's not thought. They don't have thoughts. They just have like memes.
Well, the Washington Post gave you its column space to tell your story. That at least must have been gratifying.
It's a very gratifying story, and I hold on to that with because that essay helps me a lot because it shows that, listen, the Washington Post, which was completely in the tank for Hillary Clinton and utterly opposed in every respect to Donald Trump, understood my perspective and that I had something valuable to say and that what I was saying was not outrageous at all. They certainly, you know, it's not Breitbart or some alt-right website or something like that giving me this space. This is the Washington Post, a very liberal, democratic-leaning institution of the media. So, yeah, it was very gratifying, the fact that they let me have that space. And they were saying that what I was arguing was actually had some validity, right? And their readers mostly agreed in the comments.
Oh, I'm sure. Sometimes the comments sections of articles like this are not utterly demoralizing. So that's good. But now NYU has come back and tried to, in one way or another, dispute your version of events. Can you comment on that?
Well, that just goes back to this thing where they're saying that my leave of absence had nothing to do with my opinions.
Oh, so it's just that?
Basically, yeah.
All right. So they're trying to make it's a tempest in a teapot then.
And also that the media, every time I got you know, every media outlet seemed to try to frame the narrative that way. They wanted to be, they wanted me to be the NYU professor who was thrown out for having these opinions. Whereas, you know, and I couldn't stop that framing. So I had to tell people to stop framing it that way. Then, you know, they lost interest sort of. I told them it's the media that's doing this, not me. I can't control the headlines that people use, you know.
Was there any point, by the way, at which you were tempted to shut down the account? Because I see it's still up and running. You can follow you on Twitter. I'll put that at tomwoods.com/808 also.
Thank you very much. And if you will, my new service that I founded a while ago, legitgov.org, we put out a great newsletter, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
And it's a real good exposure of things that are not found anywhere else. Legitgov.org.
Oh, all right. We will definitely... Oh, that looks good. I'm looking at it right now. In fact, here it is in my notes, as a matter of fact. I hadn't looked at it in advance.
Oh.
All right, that's great. So tomwoods.com/808 will have legitgov.org. It'll have your Twitter account, which all you folks listening in who are on Twitter, for heaven's sake, follow Michael. You're not going to be disappointed, obviously. But I guess I just want to ask you one other thing. In the course of this, I bet you have gotten correspondence from professors who have had similar experiences. Am I right about that?
I have gotten some correspondence from a lot of people that have supported me, emails, direct messages on Twitter, not all from academia. I haven't had a lot of academic support, to be quite frank, a couple here and there, and not necessarily people in the same situation. I've had some graduate students contact me saying that, you know, they understand where I'm coming from. And in fact, I've had a person that's involved in psychology as a therapist and really understood where I was coming from, but not a lot of so-called peers. It's very surprising.
Well, I'm curious about, I mean, because he's at NYU in the business school, I'm curious about Jonathan Haidt. He has to know about your case.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because he's very prominent about this stuff.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll reach out to him.
Oh, you should. You should. He's part of this heterodoxacademy.org, where it's a variety of faculty. They're not, it's not just like a right-wing swamp or anything. It's all different sorts of people who just believe the way you do.
I think that's a good way of putting it. I'm heterodox with reference to all this. I'm apostate with reference to the left. There's nothing I can do about that now.
Right, right. Wow. Yeah, and it's their fault. They did it, right?
I mean, they moved.
Right.
Yeah, they turned into hysterics. What can I say? I'm sorry. I can't talk to this. This is insane. I'm sorry about that.
Well, I hope people will check out what you're doing. I'm linking to all of it at tomwoods.com/808. And I appreciate your willingness to come out and tell your story. It's great. I'm sorry that life could be difficult for you in the future, but I don't know. You seem like a clever guy. You'll figure some way to turn this to your advantage, I hope, somehow.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's great to have like-minded and very congenial people to talk to about this.
All right, that's going to do it for today. You know, I'm going to be out of town all next week, so I'm doing a bunch of episodes in advance, and boy, are they going to be fantastic. I am looking over this list of guests, and it's great. It's really great. The topics are great. The guests are great. I think you're really going to like the upcoming episodes. This is the first year I've actually done any episodes the week after Christmas. I've normally taken that week off, and it's partly because you can't get any guests that week. Nobody wants to do the show. They're all on vacation. How about that? But this year, I wasn't doing Ron Paul curriculum videos for a change, so I was able to line up some guests in advance so that I myself can go on vacation that week. It's all working out very well. So make sure and tune in. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, if you're one of the people who listens on YouTube, look, I'm glad you listen to the show at all. That's great. But it's a tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of the audience that listens on YouTube. I want to suggest you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. It gets delivered to your device automatically. You don't miss an episode. And it really is an audio thing, this podcast, right? There ain't no video. Maybe someday, but not at this moment. So regardless of how you're listening to the program, do please subscribe so you get all the episodes. You'll see on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/808, the links to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.